Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome to the Think Orange podcast.
A podcast with ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
Here are your hosts, Dave Adamson and Ashley Bohens.
Well, welcome to the Think Orange podcast. My name is Dave. I am your host. And once again, I am flying solo here in the Orange bunker with our good friend Ashley out. Probably taking over the world is what I think she's doing, but she's doing a whole bunch of stuff with Orange, making sure that you have outstanding curriculum to serve your ministry areas. I just want to give her a shout out. She does a fantastic job. If you don't follow her on social media, make sure you do that. And today, I'm super excited about the episode we have planned because we are actually talking today about facing and confronting fear and failure and what that means to you as a leader. We've got some great guests coming in, but I really want to just give a shout out to my producer, Kevin, who's out there. He sits outside in this, he's not in the bunker. He sits in this little glass box just outside the bunker. So he can see me talking now. He's giving me that look of don't bring me on, don't bring me on. But I want to bring him in to ask him the question, Kevin, what are you most afraid of?
Well, my most irrational fear is probably dogs.
Dogs.
I'm not paralyzed with fear. I try to be very intentional about how I handle it because I really want to overcome it.
Yeah.
But if it was talking about as a leader, it probably has been fear of failure and fear of success.
That's really interesting.
I discovered that when I read Paulo Coelho's book, The Alchemist.
You are so learned.
Oh, thank you, man.
I have a fear of being a failure by sitting in the same vicinity.
Oh, get out of here with that.
Because I've never read that book. That's amazing, but it's a good book.
Okay, I'm sorry. Now you get me excited. Yes, it's a great book. I don't want to distract our listeners by going on a long epic rant, but it's one of the most amazing books. And I believe that the spiritual context are pretty great to think about what God does in our lives as well. Even though I don't think he wrote it for that context, you know.
What was it called and who was it by?
Paulo Coelho. And that's spelled, last name spelled, I think C-O-E-L-H-O.
I have a fear of how you're going to spell this name now.
C-O-E-L-H-O.
And what's it called?
The Alchemist. It's a very, very popular book. And I don't want to talk about this book because I'm going to get off track.
Well,
but the character, Santiago, goes through a lot of fear and a lot of failure.
Love that.
On the way.
Well, you have elevated the conversation already because, I mean, all I was going to say was I'm afraid of spiders. And my biggest failure is not being able to protect my family from huntsman spiders in Australia. Spiders is a big fear of mine. And we're going to actually talk a little bit about that later on. But I really want to just set up this topic. You know, today we're talking about confronting and facing your fear and failures as a leader. And we are fortunate enough to have two complementary but really opposite perspectives on this whole thing. You know, facing failure and fear is where once we are able to do that, once we have the courage to step into our failure, step into our fear, that's when we really have the opportunity to reach our God-given potential. And here's the great thing. If we can leverage the strength that we gain when we do confront our failure, when we do confront our fear, then we are able to help our ministries reach as many people as possible. We can take it further, faster when we approach these sorts of things. So I'm so glad that we get the opportunity to have this conversation today. And we're bringing in two amazing people. The first one is Ryan Leek. Ryan is an author, a speaker, a filmmaker. If you are on YouTube at all and you know about the story of the guy who proposed and married his wife on exactly the same day, then you've probably heard of Ryan. He talks a lot about confronting your failures. And then a little bit later on, you're going to hear an interview that I got to do with Carlos Whitaker. Carlos is an author and a communicator. He does a lot of stuff around here at Orange and is actually the host of our Parent Q podcast. If you don't check that out already, if you're not subscribed to that, you need to go and listen to that. And you need to get your parents in your church to listen to it as well. If you're a parent, you need to listen to this. It's the Parent Q podcast. Make sure you check that out. Carlos is the host of that, but he has got a brand new book coming out, which ironically is called Kill the Spider, which is all about confronting those things, those fears that have enveloped your life and actually directed your life in so many different areas. So you're going to love that conversation as well. Now, both of these guys have extensive ministry experience. Carlos was a worship leader and a creative director at one of the largest churches in the U.S. And Ryan is a pastor on staff at Covenant Church in Dallas, Texas, where he works with students and young adults. So I know that you're going to get so much out of both of these leaders as they talk about fear fear and failure. Now, before we hear from both of them, I just want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by the amazing Orange Tour, which is in process right now, but it's not too late for you to jump on board and be part of this tour. We are stopping at 20 different cities from Seattle, Washington, all the way down to Orlando, Florida. We are coming to a town near you, and this is a great time for you to get a one-day experience where you can get everything your ministry needs to know about serving students and children a lot better than you currently do. We've got some fantastic speakers. Carlos Whitaker is actually one of them. You're going to hear from him a little bit later. And that might be a good opportunity. Jump onto the tour and have him sign a copy of Kill the Spider. We are known to get some books in advance, and so I'm sure that that will be available on some of the stops. Now, if you'd like to find out more information about the Orange Tour, all you need to do is go to orangetour.org, orangetour.org. To find out where and when we will be near you, and you can jump on. I would highly recommend you doing that. Well, I'm going to jump out of the way now because we're going to throw straight over to Ryan Leake. This is a special talk that he gave at a recent Orange conference. You are absolutely going to love it. Check this out.
Hey, super excited to just share a couple thoughts with you, and I just want to look at one verse that I think has the potential to change every family ministry in this room. And it's found in Joshua chapter 1, verse 9. God talking to Joshua, he says this: "Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened and do not be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go." And this is a famous verse in our community. But in most of our communities, it's a suggestion. It's this idea like, oh, that's encouraging. Let's tell weak people to be strong. Let's tell scared people that they can be courageous. God talking, he goes, "Have I not commanded you? Like, thou shalt not kill. Oh, and also be strong and courageous." And as I started to think about this, I was like, well, why would God command us to be strong and courageous? It's because he's going to be with you wherever you go. So it's easy to tell us to be strong because he knows he's going to be there. And so I started asking myself this question: what would life look like if I truly believed that? What would I do if I knew God was with me wherever I went? What would I do? What, like, if I just didn't have a fear of anything and if I knew that I could not fail, what would I do? And being an ex-All-American basketball player in college, I said, you know what? I'd be in the NBA. And it haunted me. I would go to basketball games and I'd be like, I'm not just a fan. I want to play. How will I ever know if I can actually play with these guys? Try. So I'm talking to my best friend, James. I'm like, dude, I got to get back in shape. I'm going to be in the NBA. I started going through this process of eating these nasty shakes every morning and tried to change my diet. And I started asking myself, you know, what would an NBA player do today? And James would be like, dude, how are you going to get an NBA tryout? I was like, we'll figure that out later, James, okay? Like, let me just get back. And then I ended up getting hurt again. And I'm like, I started telling people I was going to try out for the NBA, and I had no opportunity to do so. I was just like, you know what? God's with me. I'll figure it out. Who knows? And in September, I emailed the Phoenix Suns, and I said, hey, here's the deal. There are fans in Phoenix that have dreams on the shelf. Let's dust them off together. You believe in that so much, you'll let a stranger try out for your basketball team. What do you say? They're like, come Monday. I said, what? I was kind of kidding, but it was like, okay, if you really want to. And so I was supposed to be at church, and I go to my pastor, like, hey, I ain't going to be here this Sunday. I got to run to Phoenix real quick. What you doing in Phoenix? You're not going to believe me. But I'm trying out for the Suns tomorrow. And we got a picture of me and Jeff Hornacek at the tryout. And so I get there. As you can see in the background, those are actual giants, okay? Those are seven-footers that do this all the time. They're paid to play basketball, and they are quite amazing. They told me, they said, hey, you're going to have a one-on-one tryout with Jeff Hornacek. And I was like, cool, I can do the one-on-one with the coach. That's nothing. And you get there and the whole team's there. You're like, hey, guys, what's going on? It's good to see you. Great. All right. All of you are much taller than me, but I'm most of the time I'm taller than everybody else. And so they put me through this trial. He's like, jump in. And I just started practicing with the Phoenix Suns. I was like, I was at Lifetime Fitness yesterday. This is a little bit of a jump. And so you're trying to figure it out. And I'm just like, I am chasing failure. Like, and I know I'm going to fail, but I have to find out what's in me. And all of a sudden, it starts to come to an end, and I'm just like, man, this was, I was good, but people in the NBA aren't good. They're outstanding. And therein lies the difference. And I was like, I hung, but I didn't do much. And so I was like, man, thank God this is over. And Coach Jeff Hornacek, he goes, well, usually we have guys do the three-minute drill. And I'm like, well, then usually it's right now. Then we need to go ahead and do the three-minute drill right now. And my friend had told me that there's three-minute drill with shooting. That's not what it is. And I knew it was bad. Like, somebody ever give you the look like you're about to die? And as soon as I told Jeff Hornacek, I said, hey, yeah, I'll do the three-minute drill. He goes, okay. And I was like, you think I'm about to die, and I'm really nervous. And so the three-minute drill is simply this. It's just sprinting for 3 minutes. Just nonstop running. Now, you got to understand something about this. It's end-to-end, and this is what he said to me. He goes, point guards in my team, they get 30 times back and forth in 3 minutes. And I was like, what you mean like by 30? Like 30, 30, 30? Like, he's like, yeah, we're going to put up on the scoreboard. Every time you touch an end, you know, we'll put it up on the scoreboard. And I was just like, no problem. Cool. He's like, Ryan, let me do the math for you. He's like, you have to get to each end in 6 seconds for 3 minutes. So I'm like, bet, I got this. And I'm like, oh, I better start stretching. I don't want to pull nothing in front of him. And all of a sudden, the whole team stopped practicing. Screeching stops. They're like, oh, yeah, we're going to watch this guy who thinks he can just come off the streets and just make an NBA team. And I was just like, guys, you're about to see something amazing. And so I get online and boom, I'm gone. I mean, I am flying and I can see how I'm doing. And about the minute and a half mark, I was at 14. So I was just like, I am cruising right now. But I knew something was wrong because the center of the basketball team, he goes, yep, started way too fast, brother. I'm like, how? How could you start way too fast? And all of a sudden, I hit an absolute wall. I mean, I couldn't feel my lungs. I couldn't feel my legs. And I was like, I am about to die right here in Phoenix. I'm like, the people, they're filming me. And all of a sudden, I felt the full weight of failure. And all of a sudden, what was supposed to be a glorious moment was my most embarrassing moment. You just see these NBA players looking at me like, I can't believe this joker even showed up. And I felt so defeated. I felt so embarrassed. And all of a sudden, Coach Jeff Hornacek, he's on the baseline, and he starts going like this. It's okay, Ryan. You got this. Finish strong. Come on, Ryan. There's more in you. Come on, Ryan. Finish strong. All of a sudden, the team started going, come on, Ryan. You got this. Finish strong. And the coach goes, hey, there's a trash can here. You can throw up later. Come on, Ryan. Finish strong. And at this point, I'm like, finish strong. Okay. Okay. I'm going to finish strong. Okay. And all of a sudden, as I'm dying on the court, every time I keep running back and forth, I keep seeing this logo, and it said Phoenix Suns. And I thought, how did I get here? Like, Ryan, look around. Where are you? And then in that moment, I realized chasing failure took me further than chasing success ever did. It's just a phase. So you should help every kid just finish strong. It is not about winning or losing. Do not let any student, any kid, any leader be defined by their success or their failure. Let them be defined by the process. You should dare every student you got to do something impossible. Not because if they achieve it, that it might change the world. You should dare them to do the impossible because it'll force them to their knees and God would change them. Chasing failure is the best thing I ever did. And I can't wait to fail again. I wouldn't even just say you should tell every kid that. You should tell yourself that. What would your family ministry look like if you really believed that God was with you wherever you went? What would you do if you knew that you couldn't fail? What would happen? What would happen to your city? What would happen to your church if we just stopped being afraid of failure and just say, you know what, Lord, I just want to go through the process, and because I'm just doing something a little bit crazy, may I lean so hard into you. May our kids lean so hard into a Savior, because by them attempting to do the impossible, they would have to lean into the God of the impossible. And isn't that our hope and prayer for every student that we encounter? My hope and prayer for each and every person in this room is that you would live as if God's walking right next to you all the time and he's got your back without fear.
Well, I want to welcome everybody to the Think Orange Bunker. We're so glad to be in here. And today I'm joined by my friend Carlos Whitaker. Carlos, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Please say my name over and over.
Carlos Whitaker?
I mean, it's Carlos if you want to.
Carlos.
Oh, you got it. You got it. That's
beautiful. You just had to get my tongue around
you
that.
You did.
How many R's are in that?
Well, there's one, but if you count that, I mean, you could throw as many as you want in there, bro.
What nationality are you, Carlos?
Yeah, my mom's from Mexico. My dad's from Panama, so I'm Panamexican.
Do you get asked that a lot?
I do, because I can really be, I'm kind of a chameleon. If you look at me, I can be Samoan. If my beard's long enough, I can be Israeli. Like, it just really depends on the situation.
Racially ambiguous.
Yes, I am.
But you're a chameleon in real life too, right? There's a lot of things that you do, and this is part of the reason why we've got you here in the bunker.
Absolutely.
What is it? For people who don't know who you are, tell us a little bit. Give us a thumbnail of your job description.
Yeah, gosh, that job description is the worst question on the planet when I'm sitting next to someone on the plane. They're like, what do you do? It's so hard to explain because it really depends on the season, right? It depends on what I'm in. As of right now, if you were to ask me right now, Carlos is an author and a speaker.
Okay.
That's what I do. I get to have fun stepping into other spaces as well. Creatively speaking, consulting organizations on social media and different things like that. But as of right now, Carlos is a communicator and an author, and that's what I'm sticking to it.
And that's part of the reason why we have you in the bunker with us today is because you're an author and you're about to release a brand new book coming out October 3rd called Kill the Spider.
There it is.
This is such a great title, and I'm sure people are in their cars right now scratching their head wondering why you're like some sort of bug repellent book. Tell us a little bit about what Kill the Spider is, because it's an awesome concept.
Yeah, thanks so much. I was on my way to a 7-day therapeutic retreat, experiential therapy retreat for 7 days outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And I was going there because I had just habits in my life that I could not break. I just couldn't break them. And so I was like, well, 7 days of therapy sounds like it may pull it off. So I don't recommend that to many people, but I was on my way. So I called my dad and I told my dad, hey, Dad, listen, I'm going to 7 days of therapy. I'm not going to have my phone. I don't really know why I'm going. I just know I keep kind of rubbing crap on my blessings. Like, I just don't know why I keep making these mistakes over and over. And he goes, Carlos. That's how you say my name. All right. He said, let me tell you a story. And I was like, Dad, I don't have time for a story. I'm pulling into the parking lot. I got to say bye to my wife and kids. Like, he's like, no, listen. When I was preaching a revival in Panama, I'll quit the accent now. my very first revival I was preaching, Miss Ramirez was standing in the back of the church. And when I gave the invitation the first night, she got up and she came forward. Hmm. And Miss Ramirez looked me in the eyes and goes, Pastor, can you please pray that the Lord cleans the cobwebs out of my life?
Yeah.
You know where we're going now. Second night of the revival, she gets up again, comes forward and looks my dad in the eye and said, can you pray again that the Lord cleans the cobwebs out of my life? So my dad prayed that again. And he goes, Carlos, the last night of the revival, I saw her get up again. And I was like, we're not praying that prayer anymore. She comes forward and she said, can you pray one more time? And I said, nope. Tonight we pray he kills the spider.
Mm.
And my dad told me, my jaw dropped as I'm pulling in the parking lot. And he goes, Carlos, I've watched you for 40 years of your life. You're an expert cobweb cleaner. You're an expert at managing the symptoms. You're there to kill the spider. And a breath entered me, and now I knew, pointed, what I was there for. I didn't know what a cobweb was. I didn't know what a spider was, but I kind of got it, right?
Yeah.
And that's really where Kill the Spider came from. I went 7 days of therapy. It didn't, honestly, I'll let you know, 7 days of therapy didn't kill my spider, okay? It helped me find the spider.
Yeah.
The killing happened after. And so that's what the book is. The book is my journey kind of with my cobwebs and my spiders and helping people figure out what those are in their lives.
So it's really about confronting the major issues that, I mean, I'm sure many people who are listening to this, their church leaders, we confront a whole lot of issues in our life, but it's really getting down to the root of what is causing those issues.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, should I define maybe put my definition for what a spider is and a cobweb
would
is.
Love you to do
I think
that.
I think it'll help the conversation a little bit. Obviously, a spider, okay, is a spider is an agreement with a lie that you have made. Okay, so everybody at their core, in some way, shape, or form, has lies that they believe, which in turn cause behaviors.
Yeah.
Those lies that you agree. So a spider, just so everybody knows, you want to kill a spider, what are you doing? You are killing a lie, an agreement that you've made with a lie.
Yeah.
A cobweb is a medicator that brings false comfort to that lie. Okay, let me say that again. A cobweb, what we clean, is a medicator that brings false comfort to the lie. So as a church leader that's listening to this, where I think we tend to lean, which is a little dangerous, is five steps to a better marriage. Let me do a sermon series of five steps to a better marriage. Well, here's the thing. I think that's important.
Yeah.
But that's just the cobweb.
Yeah.
Right? That's just the behavior. That's just the behavior that you're behaving that way because in some way, shape, or form, at some point in your life, you made an agreement with a lie that you placed as a truth now.
Yeah.
You've got to get back to that. Mm. You kill that. You fix that. Marriage issues are fixed. Budgeting money issues are fixed. Pornography is fixed. All of these things are fixed. You got to kill the spider.
And for some of us, we maybe made that agreement with that lie subconsciously. We didn't know it was there. And for some of us, we've probably carried it for years and years and years, right?
It is so true.
Is that how it worked for you?
Yes. You know, I mean, exactly what you said. Most of these spiders were born in our childhood.
Yeah.
Most of them were. Most of the behaviors were coming from places where, you know, anxiety may be something that helped you as a child because things were so chaotic in your life. You needed fear in order to feel safe. So you made a lie at some point that you've got to, you know, I'll just give my example for instance. My spider, now there's, again, I want to let people know there's many spiders.
Yeah.
You can have big, hairy, nasty, scary spiders. You can have small spiders that are birthed. My major spider when I went to therapy, when I went to 7 days of therapy, was that God had abandoned me. That's I finally got to the lie. This was the lie. I had believed that God had abandoned me because I had a panic attack 15 years earlier. Mm-hmm. I'd prayed that God would get rid of it, that it would go away. And guess what? The next day I woke up with anxiety. Suddenly I throw my arms up. I never said it, Dave, out loud. Mm. But I thought, maybe he's done. Maybe I'm so bad that he's done. So what do? I start medicating that lie with actions. I start medicating that lie. And then it turns into anxiety. It turns into pornography. It turns into alcohol. And suddenly I'm just, because here's the deal. As humans, we're living in, and you guys know this, your leaders listening to this, we're living in a world at war, spiritually speaking.
Yeah.
We are looking for any semblance to relieve our pain.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do. And suddenly these things, these medicators, become the things that we focus on. Oh, now I'm drinking too much. You know what? I need to stop drinking. So I'm going to focus on the drinking. No, let's get back to the lie. Let's get back to the space. Break that agreement and you kill your spider.
And I'm sure you would agree. For a lot of people listening to this, we might be thinking that, you know, if I'm drinking too much, that might be one cobweb. But I'm sure that for most people who are listening to this, the cobwebs are a lot more subtle. Maybe it's chasing that extra like on social media. Maybe it's speaking at a different conference that has more people to it, right? Not always those big spider webs that we think of in scary movies.
This is why you're the host of this podcast. You get to ask these questions and not even necessarily even reading the book. You're there. You're there because here, again, not big, hairy. They don't have to be these massive cobwebs that were like, you know, I read a quote somewhere where it says that, running into a cobweb is the fastest way to learn karate because when you do that, suddenly you start chopping and you start swinging. You don't want that thing in your face.
Yeah.
But here's the thing about the enemy and how he sneaks in. Sometimes our God-given desires, sometimes the most beautiful things that God has given us, those are the things that can turn into cobwebs, right? So for instance, I love to fly fish. It's become this thing that I feel like the Lord has given me. Like I feel his presence. I feel peace. It's beautiful. I'm in the outdoors. Well, what happens when I start going fly fishing because I don't want to be around my family anymore?
Yeah.
What happens when the thing that God has given you, it turns from this desirable thing into a cobweb? It can happen so fast if you're not careful. So the enemy loves to come in and trick us, right?
Yep.
And start turning these beautiful things into cobwebs.
Yeah, that's so good. Hey, I don't know if you know this. I'm from Australia.
Yeah.
And we have this spider in Australia. It's called a huntsman spider.
Oh, I already don't like it.
It is the size of your hand. And I'm a massive arachnophobe.
Yeah.
But I remember growing up, there were kids that you hung out with who would poke the huntsman spiders that were around.
Yeah.
And if it was a female, as soon as you poked it, you poked one spider. What actually happened was all these baby spiders would pour off its back. Like I'm talking like 20, 30, 40 spiders would pour off its back.
Gross.
Now, that as you're talking, that's the picture I've got in my head because I'm sure for a lot of people, if they poke one spider, they're going to realize there's actually been a plethora of lies that they've been believing their whole life. Yeah. Would that be fair?
Yes, absolutely. When you uncover one, and that's the thing that I try to help people do in the book. Like I'm not thinking that you'll read this book and you're going to be spiderless, but I'm trying to help people identify one, just one spider.
Yeah.
And once that happens, you're right, Dave, like you start realizing, oh my gosh, here's another lie I believe. Here's another lie I believe. And here's the thing that I want people to know too. They don't just have to exist and be born in your childhood.
Yeah.
Every day we sometimes can be manipulated by the world that we live in to create these lies. And so, great example. So I've got this God has abandoned me lie, right? Yep. I defeat that, I kill it. Well, just a few weeks ago, I'm speaking at a conference. And let me show you how a lie can be born in adulthood. I'm speaking at a conference, I look on the schedule, Bob Goff is speaking right before me and John Acuff is speaking right after me. Two incredible communicators who I thought the second I saw that, why am I even here? What do I have to say that these two guys aren't good? I mean, they're gonna love Bob Goff. And then John Acuff is the funniest human being on the planet.
Yeah.
Why am I here, God? Why am I here? I make an agreement just like that with a lie that I'm useless.
Yeah.
And I had to, in the moment, kill it. You can kill it in the moment. I replaced that lie with God's truth, stood up on that stage and was used. But we've got to be careful not to let the small spiders get birthed every single day.
That's so good. There's so much good stuff in there just alone. Yeah. That you just gave us the price of this podcast. Oh. You just covered it right there. Now, there's a lot of other stuff that you cover in the book and I'm really excited for it to come out so that we can unpack that a little bit further. But there's one that I specifically saw. You say here is greater than hustle.
Yeah.
Can you explain that a little bit?
Leaders that are listening to this podcast, the last 3 or 4 years, hustle has become the sexiest word in leadership. It just has become, I'm a solopreneur, right? So I run my own business. I get it. Like you got to hustle. But suddenly, if we start out hustling our life, if we start out hustling the moments that God's given us, it becomes a dangerous thing. I think, again, this is something that is a God-given ability that he's given us that quickly can turn into a cobweb. Yep. And so as leaders, sometimes the hustle of ministry becomes an idol. Mm. Sometimes if I work harder, if the people that I'm leading see me, I'm working so hard, I feel like we're going to miss so much that God has for us. Because if you think about it, okay, I know times are different now, but the average pace a human being would travel, even 100 years ago, was 3 miles an hour. Okay, that is how fast we walk as humans.
Yeah.
Now, in the last 100 years, we're not only with our travel and planes and all these things, but the communication and the input and the stuff that we're putting in our brain is coming so fast. And I don't believe that as human beings, God has designed us to hustle as fast and as hard as we are. And I believe when we lower the volume in our lives and lower the speed of our life, at that moment, especially if you're trying to kill your spider, I don't think you're ever going to even find your spider at the pace of hustle that we are.
Yeah.
You've got to hesitate. You got to be here. You got to slow down enough to hear from God. Because the truth is, in a conversation, there's two people talking.
Mm.
And in prayer, there's two people talking. If you're just talking to God, giving a speech to him, you're never going to be able to pause enough to hear what he has for you. And where, I mean, you can ask him specifically, God, where is this lie? I believe you're not going to hear him unless you slow down.
Yeah. What do you mean by the word here? And I mean the H-E-R-E.
Yeah.
No, H-E-A-R.
Yes, absolutely.
What do you mean by being here?
Present. Yep. Being present in the moment. Even as we've recorded this podcast, my phone has been placed up and I've had 4 or 5 push notifications that have lit the screen of my phone, which is 100%. I'm talking to you and listening to you, but bam, my mind goes to like, oh, I wonder who's going to, no. Oh, I wonder what's happening here.
Hmm.
That's not being here. Mm. That's not being present. We have to, on purpose, create these spaces where we're present yeah. with, not only relationally with each other, but with the Holy Spirit. That may have been the most massive shift. Listen, bro, I've been on some of the most incredible church staffs on the planet. The amount of time that we would sit in silence on any of these staffs was less than what, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a mathematician, but the percentage was really small. And guess what? I was hearing as much from God as to where I needed to lead the ministry I was in or whatever, because we were just talking and doing and creating and going and hustling and not being H-E-R-E.
Yeah. I like what you said. Being successful, being creative, having that drive is a great thing.
Yeah.
But it can become something that becomes that medicates us because we're either, it's a trap we fall in, right? Yes. It can lead us away from the things that God wants us to be, like with our family, for example, with our spouses. But it can also be something where we start to crave the success or we start to crave the approval of whoever it is we're working for.
Oh gosh. That approval thing. Now we're stepping in another cobweb, right?
Oh yeah.
So now you step into another cobweb where my superior's approval of me is suddenly now my identity. Now there's a cobweb. You spun it.
Yeah.
And where's that coming from?
Yeah.
We have to start asking ourselves the question, why is it that I'm so desperate for that person's approval? Well, at some point in your life, you made an agreement that's true of you, their vision of you is your worth. That's a lie. That's a spider. You got to kill it. You know, for my wife in particularly, I'm writing this book and talking about these cobwebs, right? These cobwebs that I've struggled with, alcohol addiction or pornography or relationship addiction or these ugly things. Mm. And I'm talking to my wife and looking at my wife during, as I'm writing it. And I'm like, she doesn't struggle with any of this. Her cobwebs are so tidy and they're so cute and neat because she's not struggling with these big hairy things. But for her, you know, she told me, guess what? For me, my wife is a great friend. She throws great parties. She's like the entertainer that everybody loves to come to our house and be entertained because she's a great hostess. And you would think that's something beautiful because it is. The Lord gave her this. And this is something, a God-given desire that turned into a cobweb for her. She realized when I was writing the book, she said, you know what? My cobweb is that I feel if I don't throw these parties and if I'm not the super creative hostess friend, that the friends are going to disappear. Mm. Do you see how suddenly her lie when we dug was this? This was her spider. I must do to be loved. Mm. There it is. And suddenly she said, I can't do this anymore. For 2 weeks, I'm not going to throw one party. I'm not going to invite one friend over. I'm going to see who reaches out to me. And I'm just going to have my identity and my love be placed on God loving me. And there it is. But it took some work to get there.
That's so good. Hey, because we're just two guys sitting here around the table talking, we've got another guy here who's producing, Kevin. Yeah. My next question for you is this. Do you think that there are spider webs that are unique to men, or do you think that male leaders or men just in general are more susceptible to spiders?
Man, that's a great question. If we're speaking about spiders being lies, no, I believe men and women are both going to make agreements with lies, but cobwebs in general, absolutely. I think that there's things that men, okay, females, again, I don't want to put a broad generalization over anybody. This can work left or right, up or down, but men have a harder time finding true intimacy with other human beings, okay? Mm-hmm. Whether it be their spouse or with other men, okay? And so what we do, we have a tendency to turn our loves, right? Our hobbies.
Yep.
Men tend to turn their hobbies into cobwebs more, I've found, right? And so those hobbies become these places of refuge that our family should be given to us, right? And then there's straight up pornography, okay? There is that is something, just statistically speaking, more men struggle with than women. And so what that is, okay, again, sticking a program on your laptop and having an accountability partner, although as great as those things can be on the surface, are in no way, shape, or form even remotely changing you, even remotely healing you. You've got to get to the intimacy issue. My marriage fell apart 6 years ago because I stepped outside of the confines of my marriage to find what I found out was a rush. It was almost a drug of like, oh my gosh, somebody else is looking at me, giving me things that I don't believe my wife is. Now, when we went to therapy and to counseling, my wife, being the prophetess that she is, looked at me after story, the end of the story is we're together. We have a great family. So you guys can not hold your breath too much longer. Yeah. but she looked at me and she said, "Hey, listen, I'm not going back to that marriage. Yep. That marriage is over. We're going to start a new marriage here." Mm. And if we would have just tried to fix our marriage, we would have been cleaning the cobweb.
So good.
And so, so for men, you know, we do, it's very easy for us to fall down this false relational intimacy cobweb. Yeah. It really is. That's something that we struggle with.
Yeah. I would say another cobweb that we have as men is we define ourselves by a success.
Yes.
We define ourselves by what's written on our business card or what the signature is on our email rather than who God made us to be or who we are in the eyes of who we are in that one job that nobody can replace us in. Yep. And that's as a dad or as a husband, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I know this is an issue for me. And I would say, you know, to get to talk personally about some spiders, you know, coming from the childhood that I had, where I was abandoned, sexually abused, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of things. I know that that created more little spiders for me when it comes to acceptance, when it comes to feeling valued, when it comes to not being rejected. Mm. But it also did in, I started to place my value on the things that I saw in other people that were valuable.
Yes.
I mean, I had a chat just, I'm getting super personal with you here, but fine. I had a chat just like 3 months ago with my wife about how when I bring a paycheck home from some side hustle, I feel her approval more. And it wasn't because she was giving it more.
Yeah.
It's just that I was seeing it more because I wanted to see it.
Absolutely. And again, Dave, like this is humanity speaking, right? This is just you being human.
Yeah.
You know, that these things, once I feel like we have the definitions of these things, I'm just seeing how easy it is for you to suddenly plop this idea in your life because suddenly it's like, oh, I get it. And you know, why I wrote the book is to kind of give people easy access to be able to say, oh, I feel like when I tell people the story of my dad and I say a cobweb and a spider, I don't even have to get 20 more seconds in and people are like, oh,
got it.
I got it.
Yeah.
I see it. I've got it. You know, and so where I really chase in the book is helping people step into this space with the Holy Spirit of killing the spider. Cause that's where the killing takes place. Yeah. That is where the murder of that spider takes place is diving into prayer, diving into the Holy Spirit and diving into some spaces that if we believe in that spiritual warfare is real, which hopefully everyone listening to this podcast does, then if we're believing that, then we're going to have to do some work, you know, in that realm.
Yeah. It really does just give handles, right? To carry our baggage essentially.
Yes.
You're giving us a concept that puts handles on the baggage that we're already carrying.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really good. Hey, there's one more extra thing that I wanted to discuss with you that I mentioned in the book, and you kind of mentioned it before. Sure. If we're not here, if we're not present, we miss out on things. One of the buzzwords around at the moment, I've got three teenage daughters. Mm-hmm. It's all, Dad, I've got FOMO. Oh, but you say FOMO is a straight up no-no.
Yes.
Can you explain a little bit of that to us?
Yes, FOMO is a straight up no-no. First of all, for anyone listening that doesn't know what FOMO is, you have a better accent. Why don't you just define FOMO?
FOMO, fear of missing out.
Yes, we are living in an age where FOMO is massive. Why? Well, that's because we have devices that show us when we're not included. That's basically what Snapchat and Instagram stories has become for me in different moments. Oh my gosh. Like Mike and John and Derek, they're hanging out, but we always hang out together. Why am I not hanging out with them? And suddenly I've got FOMO, fear of missing out. And suddenly I start creating lies in that moment. Like, well, maybe I'm just not a good enough friend. Maybe, what did I do? Did I say something? And so FOMO is a no-no because FOMO does nothing more than give birth to spiders. FOMO does nothing more than give birth to spiders. Again, I keep saying we weren't created to do this. We weren't created to do that. I don't think we were created to know everything that everybody's doing all the time.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. Not that we can't step into that, but I say it's a no-no because it does. It gives birth to spiders. Your identity is suddenly being placed not in who God sees you as, but in who you are as a friend, in who you are as, and I get it, man. I get the FOMOs all the time. You know,
we all do, right? And I think you made a great point. We carry a device in our pocket that constantly reminds us of what we're missing out on. And we spoke to John Acuff, and he told me that he just turns off all the notifications on his phone altogether so that he doesn't get interrupted. But I think there's another purpose to this.
Yeah.
You're not getting made aware of what you're missing out on.
Absolutely.
As well. And that allows you to be present. One of the things we do at our house, and I'm sure you have something like this as well. I'd love to hear what you do.
Yeah.
Every Friday night, we collect all the devices in our house. Yep. We put them all into a basket. We put the basket up on top of the shelf out of reach. Uh-huh. And we have 24 hours of technology free. And we found our kids played Lego.
Right.
We played board games. Absolutely. We watch movies together. We make popcorn together.
Yep.
And it's just that little thing of removing this little device.
It is. And you know, here's the thing. We're also, they're not going to go away. These devices aren't going to go away. So we've got to, if you're a dad or your parent listening to this, I tell people all the time, social media is like a big tidal wave. Like if you're a parent, you could either hold up a surfboard and act and pretend like it's a shield, like you're going to somehow stop the tidal wave, or you can turn the surfboard and you can hop on and you can surf it with your kids. Yeah. And so let's not use it as a shield. Let's use it as a surfboard. So we have kind of the same thing. We had a bag, we called it the phone bag, that all the phones went in a certain time of day. And so even my phone went in, but then I actually found this app called Unglue, which has kind of become the phone bag for us. So Unglue, what it does is at a certain time every day, it actually turns off entertainment apps and the internet on all of our devices. So suddenly we still have our devices to take pictures and stuff, but they just no longer function as a FOMO device. And so suddenly Unglue, you can set a time like at 8:30 PM, FOMO goes away. And at 8 AM, FOMO comes back, you know, but Unglue actually turns the internet off on all of our devices, but we don't have to put them away. So that's something that we've done.
Yeah, that's really cool. We do that with our Wi-Fi. It goes off at 8 o'clock and my kids get up and go, I don't understand why I can't get on. Well, it's because we set it up this way. We also set up so that we change our passwords all the time.
Yes, absolutely.
And we say to the kids, we will give you the new password if you empty the dishwasher. Yep,
that's good. I love
it. You know, and then it's always my dad rules is always the password or something to that effect. Hey, Carlos, it has been fantastic having you in here. Thank you so much. So looking forward to the release of this book. Tell us again when it's released, how we can pre-order it, and where we can get it from.
So I'll go ahead and tell you, if you're listening to this before October 3rd, you can pre-order it if you go to killthespider.com and you get tons of resources. I mean, I've created, you know, I don't know how you put value on this, but like a 10 to 15 minute episodes, 10 of them, as an e-course to help you along with the book. And the e-course, we put so much into it, could almost be used as a small group study. So you guys get that. I actually have a friend of mine that read the book, he's a composer, and he scored an instrumental soundtrack to every chapter of the book. So that we have Kill the Spider soundtrack that you guys get as well.
Yep.
He actually did that to my book Moment Maker, and I'm giving you guys that as well. You're getting a manifesto. You're getting all kinds of extra stuff if you pre-order. But if it's past the date, we'll see if the pre-orders swag just hangs on the website for a little bit. But you can go to killthespider.com and all that stuff is available. And share it. I really think this book's going to bring a lot of healing to a lot of people.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that's going to be a lot of people who get this, who understand that concept. And hopefully we're going to see marriages restored.
Yes.
People are going to be given hope, maybe for the first time in a long time.
Absolutely.
And especially church leaders, Christian leaders who are listening to this podcast right now. I think there's something in this for you guys. So not only get it for yourself, but to get it for your team as well. I could see a team going through this and just growing together, killing spiders together. Go on a spider killing spree or something.
Kill the spiders in your staff. And then, you know, hey, I'm no shame in my game. Do it a small group for, you know, for your entire church, you know, buy 4,000 copies for your church and your friend's church. And let's kill spiders together.
That's awesome. Thanks so much, mate. Well, what an amazing interview that was. I loved and appreciated the authenticity and the honesty that Carlos was sharing with us. I mean, and in reality, I mean, one of the fears that we have is the fear of authenticity. As leaders, we want to present an image of us, a persona of us, because we want to be seen as leaders. And we're afraid that if we're too authentic, we might fail. So we have this fear of being authentic in case it leads to failure. And what I loved about that interview was Carlos just stepped right over both of those two things and was just open and honest and authentic with all of us. Now, I want to bring my producer Kevin in on this. Kevin, I know that you really enjoyed that interview as well.
I really did, Dave. And I'm just really glad that we get to do this together. I'm glad that we get to help make sure that while we can help leaders understand all the different tactics for volunteer recruitment and retention and how to get students involved, at the end of the day, like John Maxwell said, right, like, you are the lid, right? And at some point, and God is more concerned with who you are as a person than who you are as a leader.
I totally agree.
And I think that what we're talking about today is saying, hey, when we start to deal with us again in a more meaningful way, that you know, our potential gets unlocked. And really, and this is my last point, David, and I'll shut up, I promise. what really hits home to me is that this is what I've been learning for the past 3 years since I've been here with the team at Orange.
Yeah.
The next level of leadership is not about leadership.
Mm.
It's about you.
Yes.
And that has been so ironic.
Yeah.
Because for me, I'm a learner, and you and I are talking about books we're reading, and
yeah.
And so it's like, yeah, good to great, and then this and that and that. And it's like, but man, me trying to become a better leader pushed me into counseling. You know, me trying to be a better leader pushed me to a lot of things I did not know I had to deal with. And then it's like, because God wants me to be okay. Because at the end of the day, I'm still his son.
Yeah.
And God's not trying to put his children in circumstances to elevate others, only to see them be destroyed in the process.
Yeah.
And so I'm just really, really inspired by what Carlos and Ryan had to say, Kevin, working on you is the next step.
I totally agree, because working on yourself, leading yourself, self-leadership is such a key to that next step in your spiritual journey, your ministries journey, your leadership journey. And it not only starts to impact the people that you're standing in front of every week, but it also starts to impact more often than not your family as well, the people you're with. I mean, the biggest stage that you'll ever be on as a leader is at home. In front of your wife, in front of your husband, in front of your children, that is where the rubber really hits the road.
That is so good, Dave. Mm. That is so good. Thank you for saying that, because that's convicting.
Yeah, I know for me, you know, some of the stuff that I shared even during that interview with Carlos, I've had to learn to overcome some of my spiders. And some of that has been just getting to the point of being able to serve myself. And to serve my family has made me a better leader in my ministry context as well. And that's what I loved about this episode. You know, one of the things I loved saying to people is, if serving is beneath you, then leadership is beyond you. And some of that starts with you serving yourself and you serving your family before you serve anybody else. If serving is beneath you, then leadership is beyond you. We really hope that you got so much out of this episode. If you did, we would love it if you would share it with your friends and your family. There's a bunch of easy ways you can do that. You can find most of them at thinkorangepodcast.com. That's where we have all of our show notes. So in the show notes, we include links to talks, we include links to resources, we have tweetable quotes from the episode today. There's also a contact form there where you can reach out to us. We would love to hear your story. We want to hear your story of fear. We want to hear your story of failure, because we're not just here to talk at you. We want to talk with you, and we want to serve you. We want to take that advice ourselves. We want to serve you. And the best way for us to do that is by you filling out some details on the contact form at thinkorangepodcast.com so that we can get to know and serve you a little bit better. We'd also love it if you could subscribe to this podcast on whatever platform you're listening to, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Make sure that you subscribe and also write a review. The reviews really help us, because it helps get the word out a little bit more, and it means that people start sharing it when they see that a podcast is getting great reviews. So it might only take you 5 minutes to do it, but it's such an important 5 minutes for you to get the word out about this podcast and share it with your team and with people from around the country. So make sure you do that. Please hit up the subscribe and hit up the show notes and hit up the review as well. Well, we're so glad that you could join us. I can't wait till our next episode. Hopefully Ashley will be back in the bunker with us, and it can be the three amigos again. Ashley, Kevin, and Dave. That would be amazing. Kevin, I want to bring you in on our little sign out once more. Here it is. When you think next generation, think Orange.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Think Orange podcast.
Join us next time for more ideas and conversations to help you influence the next generation.
For more episodes and show notes, visit thinkorangepodcast.com.